Grab your coffee and get ready to talk about another Hollywood true crime case. This one is not that well known, but I really think it should be. Today we'll be covering the mysterious death of Nancy Spungen and Sid Vicious. This does come with a trigger warning. In this episode, we'll be talking about substance abuse, violence, and suicide. But with that being said, let's take to the notes to break it all down. Before we get into the crimes that took place, it's important to know the characters within the story, those who were involved in the crime itself. The mystery that surrounds this case really starts with John Simmons Ritchie, otherwise known as Sid Vicious. You may know this name because he was in the band Sex Pistols, which were pretty famous in their heyday. Often with cases like this one, we get into the factor of childhood and the discussion of nature versus nurture, why people become the way they are. And in Ritchie's case, he didn't have a great childhood. His parents met in the British Army, and they had him in 1957. The plan was for his mother and father to move from London to Ibiza and then have his father support the family. Well, his mother went, but eventually they realized his father was not going to show up. After this realization, his mother decided to move on with her life and remarry. However, after finding some sense of normalcy, his stepfather died from cancer just 6 months after marrying his mother. Basically, by the time he was 14, he'd moved around 4 times. And when he was 16, he met John Lydon, who would later become the singer for the Sex Pistols. It's said that Lynott actually gave Sid Vicious his name, naming him after his hamster, Sid, who was very sweet but had a very vicious bite. And who would have thought a punk rock name would have been inspired by a hamster? The two became fast friends and ended up living together in London. For money, they would play music on the streets, although they were often paid just to stop. And obviously, they would later go on to form the Sex Pistols, but before that, Ritchie, aka Sid Vicious, would be part of many other bands. Actually, beginning in 1976, when he was just 19 years old, he first played drums at the 100 Club Punk Festival, which is kind of a big deal in the punk rock industry. And from there, he joined the Flowers of Romance, getting intertwined with big names in the punk scene. Vicious would also be considered for the position of lead singer for The Damned, but never showed up for the audition, claiming that he didn't have all of the information, thinking that it was withheld from him. These thoughts actually caused tension between The Damned and Sid Vicious, and would later go on to be one of his first acts of violence. During one of their performances, he threw a glass on stage, and though it was meant to hit the lead singer as an act of revenge, it actually shattered and hit an innocent girl, blinding her in one eye, and this caused him to get arrested. Just a year after this, he was asked to join the Sex Pistols after the original bass guitarist had left, and their manager actually said, quote, "If Johnny Rotten, aka John Lanoid, was the voice of punk, then Sid Vicious was the attitude." He also said that if he'd seen Vicious first, that he would have likely asked him to be the lead singer due to his iconic punk look. His look must have been iconic considering that he was brought on to play bass guitar but literally had zero experience. He was actually so bad that all of his performances on the first album had to be dubbed over. But a lot of that was due to the fact that he was absent for many of the recording sessions because he was hospitalized with hepatitis, and this is thought to have been caused by his drug use. During his stay in the hospital, he was visited by Nancy, who was a groupie. The two had met in 1977, and though he was using drugs prior to meeting Nancy, which unfortunately were supplied by his mother, it's said that Nancy had introduced him to heroin, which became the drug of choice for Sid Vicious. And it also seems like heroin played a big factor in the escalation of his behavior. There were times when the band had to have a talk with him about his behavior and how his interactions with the audience were inappropriate. This ultimately began the deterioration of the group. And a year later, they would go on to do their first US tour, even though most of the shows got canceled. The issues within the group seemed to be projected onto stage, and they got worse when an audience member irritated Sid, and he decided to hit him in the head with his guitar. This was likely because he was irritable due to heroin withdrawal, which was extremely bad on this particular night. Actually, it was so bad that he carved the words, "Give me a fix," onto his bare chest with a razor before the performance. And following this, they performed in San Francisco, which would be their last live performance together before breaking up. And now that Sid Vicious no longer belonged to the Sex Pistols, he would go on to try to have a solo career as a vocalist doing mostly covers, but actually it earned him a lot of money and pretty large crowds. And during this career transition is actually where the sadness begins and the mystery starts. Right around the time Vicious was charged with assault for a man named Todd Smith, he was sent to Rikers Island for 55 days to do a severe detox. And you might be wondering how we got here. Why did he attack somebody so violently for seemingly no reason? Well, that's because shortly before this attack, his girlfriend, Nancy Spungen, was found dead in the hotel bathroom. The circumstances surrounding the death of Nancy and the reaction from Sid Vicious were pretty shocking. So here's what we know. Nancy was from Philadelphia, and she was born to a middle-class family. Her mother actually described her as a difficult child, saying that she had physical assaults, screaming tantrums, and often bullied her siblings. When she was 11, Nancy was expelled from school and was sent to a boarding school. She also spent some time in an institution for schizophrenia. But remember that all of these things I'm presenting are not my opinion. They are just fact. I'm not here to determine whether or not Nancy or Sid is a good or bad person. I'm just stating what we do know about this case. And it's also important to note that no matter how much of a difficult child someone is or a difficult person someone is, they never deserve to have their life cut short. Just as Vicious was known for being punk and aggressive, people often found Nancy pretty abrasive. Somehow the two really enjoyed each other, and after meeting in 1977, they traveled around the UK and the US together with the band, and then she stuck by his side when he decided to go solo. As I said, it was pretty widely known that they were both heavily into the use of drugs, especially heroin. And maybe it was that she was supplying drugs, or maybe it was that they fueled each other's fire, but the two became absolutely inseparable. Some believe that he was so drawn to her because he was actually very shy on the inside and liked being around strong personalities. And in him, she saw a young, shy, rising star that was easily malleable. Meanwhile, he saw her as this tough New Yorker who knew about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Unfortunately, not many people have good things to say about the couple. It seems that they were addicted to each other and to heroin, and they often brought out the worst in each other because of this. And this is especially true because when it comes to enabling his violent behaviors, Nancy was his number one supporter. One onlooker even said that Nancy once told Sid to push a groupie down the stairs at a nightclub, and he did so without even a second thought. People around the couple encouraged their demise. Actually, the manager of the group admitted to trying to have Nancy kidnapped and put on a plane back to New York so she wouldn't be around Sid Vicious. This plan obviously fell through because the two were inseparable. They were never apart. And this is what caused Sid to eventually hit that fan on the head with his guitar, which was ultimately the last straw for the band. While he was exploring his life as a solo artist, they both moved into the Chelsea Hotel in New York. And this was a common thing for big names in the industry to do at the time. Cheryl Tippins recounts what happened on the night that everything fell apart in their article, Inside the Dream Palace, The Life and Times of New York's Legendary Chelsea Hotel. Tippins says, quote, "On the night of October 11th, several visitors to the room saw Sid take as many as 30 tablets of a very specific drug. It was a barbiturate, and they state that this was a far larger dose of barbiturate than most people could survive, and definitely would put someone into a deep state of unconsciousness for hours, and he did remain comatose through the morning's early hours," unquote. And according to New York Magazine, the rest of the night went as follows. Around 2:30 a.m., Nancy asks Sid Vicious's bodyguard for some painkillers. Then around 7:30 a.m., moans were heard coming from the guest room. Around 10 a.m., Sid calls the front desk of the Chelsea asking for help as he's found Nancy on the bathroom floor. Apparently, she's been stabbed in the stomach with a K-11 hunting knife and has bled to death. Some say that this knife was almost identical to the one that Sid had recently purchased. Upon the police arriving, they found Sid wandering the hallways in an agitated state. They arrested him and charged him with Nancy's murder because he was confessing to the murder as he was walking around. Although he would later go on to deny that he had any involvement and claim that he was asleep when she was stabbed. To this day, what really happened to Nancy that night is pretty much up in the air. Some believe it was a suicide, thinking that Nancy stabbed herself to get Sid's attention, but that he was too drugged out to help her in any way. Which is possible because she had done it before. While the band was in Paris, Sid had to leave Nancy to join the rest of the band on set. And director Julian Temple said he came back to find Nancy had cut her wrists and there was blood everywhere. He says she faked a suicide attempt to make Sid feel that he shouldn't leave her even for a few hours. But others think that there was foul play involved. Many think Sid was the one to blame, considering that he did at one point say, quote, "I stabbed her, but I never meant to kill her," then saying that he didn't remember at all, and at one point during the argument, Nancy had fallen onto the knife, quote-unquote. Though others say that that couldn't be because he was so knocked out on these drugs. His friends think the same thing. They say that he couldn't have killed her because she was his first and only love. Yet the theory of a drug deal gone wrong and circumstances that surround it are still circulating today. This is because the bodyguard who supplied the drugs that night, named Rocket's Red Glare, once admitted to killing Nancy after she tried to rob him of the drugs. It's said that he even showed a handful of bloody cash to prove it. Now, this is all alleged. None of this has been 100% confirmed. There's also a large amount of money that was missing from the hotel room on the night of the murder. However, this admission was, quote, overheard, meaning that we can't really prove it, and of course the bodyguard denied it his whole life following the incident until his death in 2001. The reason that we don't really know much of what happened is because there wasn't a great investigation in the days following. Shortly after Sid's arrest, he was released on $25,000 bail, and following his release, he attempted suicide by slitting his wrists with a smash light bulb. Because of this, he was hospitalized, but that didn't stop him from trying again. He actually jumped out of the hospital window and shouted that he wanted to be with his Nancy. Then, on February 1st, 1979, Vicious had some friends over to celebrate making bail while he awaited trial for Nancy's murder. And though he had just undergone an extreme detox during his time with the program, one of his friends was asked to bring heroin. That night, Sid overdosed and was found in the morning by his mother. His mother, who was also said to be supplying him drugs earlier in his life, seemed to be against the relationship he had with Nancy. She wouldn't allow friends to spread his ashes by Nancy's grave and claimed that he and Nancy had a suicide pact, which she believed is why he took the drugs that night. She says she found a note in his jacket that said, quote, "We had a death pact, and I have to keep my half of the bargain. Please bury me next to my baby, bury me in my leather jacket, jeans, and motorcycle boots. Goodbye," unquote. Sid and Nancy's lives ended in a pretty similar set of circumstances, no matter which way you look at it. In both cases, drugs were involved. It could have been suicide. It could have been planned or accidental. And they both passed away very young, being only 20 and 21 years old at the time of their deaths. And though Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones was paying all of Sid's legal fees, the truth behind what really happened to Nancy seemed too much for Sid to bear. Upon Sid's death, the investigation was abandoned, with most believing that he did commit the crime due to his earlier confessions. But given the missing money, the overheard confessions from the bodyguard, the past suicide attempts to get Sid's attention, no one can really know for sure. Either way, this tragedy broke up a couple, it broke up families, it broke up a band, and it left behind a punk rock community to wonder what happened, even all these years later. That's it for this episode. Write into the show by DMing me on Instagram at MeganTheMorningPodcast, letting me know what you think really happened. To find my sources for this episode, go ahead and visit the show notes. and I will be back next week with a pop culture conspiracy.